Welcome to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
And we're live.
Hey, it's Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Natto.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
And you're listening to the Press Box. Now, guys, let's start off this show with some big local sports news. What can you tell me, Zach, about the Blackjacks this week? I hear that they signed another forward for their team.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this signing. He's Dominic Archie. He's a 6'7" forward. Got 11 years of pro basketball experience. I'm really excited for him. He's actually spent the last 2 years playing in France, of all places. So that's kind of cool. He's a big European player. He's played all over the world, really. Even the NBA G League, which is kind of cool. He averages about 11.4 points. So he's just another solid depth guy for the roster, I think.
Absolutely. I can't agree more with that. Like you said, he spent a lot of time over in Europe, not just France, but over in Italy, Israel, Belgium, Romania. He's been around. And over in Europe, he has over 389 game starts. So he's definitely someone you can rely on to be there in the lineup when you need him.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be quite the signing. And I mean, we've discussed all these signings that the Blackjacks have had over the last few weeks. It just seems like every time they add somebody, the person has even more experience, even more of a pedigree, like 389 games. Like you said, Lita, like multiple countries, multiple pro leagues. And then you have the G League with, I mean, 11.4 points per game. You can't go wrong with someone that can score in double digits every game. And then, I mean, when you tack on 5.1 rebounds and a solid 27.8 minutes per game, that's impressive. So you know that he's going to be yet another workhorse for the Blackjacks.
And the fact that he's so versatile, he can play a number of positions on the floor. Like, he's really tall. He's got the ability still at his age, and he's got like really good court awareness. He's played in some of the top leagues. So I'm really looking forward to him. Sucks again that the season did get delayed back to June 24th, but at least the season opener isn't going to be an away game anymore. It's going to be a home game. So that's kind of fun.
It's a lot of fun. And I mean, like you said, he has great court awareness. He's sneaky too. He's not afraid to steal the ball and, you know, go make a play down the field and get that basket in. The Blackjacks are only getting better with every signing that they're telling us about. I don't know about you guys, but it's definitely getting me excited for the season.
Yeah, I mean, I am beyond pumped for this season, especially after how well they did last year in their first season in the bubble, so to speak, down in St. Catharines. But to actually, hopefully at some point during this season, have home games with fans, be able to be there, watch this team that they've put together. I mean, I'm really excited for the Blackjacks season to hopefully get to a few games. It's definitely an exciting time for basketball in Ottawa.
And it's really good that the excitement is still there for such like a new league. It's only like this is its third season, I think, right? So for the excitement to still be there and not be shut down immediately, I think it's great.
I don't see why anyone would pass up an opportunity to watch professional basketball in Canada and in Ottawa for that matter, no matter what league it is. Like, this is going to be very exciting. They're going to be extremely happy to finally be able to hopefully play in front of some fans at some point this year. Don't know if it's going to be the home opener, so to speak, but we shall see. Now, touching on TD Place, we got the Atletico Ottawa. They just keep signing more and more players as well, getting their team ready, getting their team prepped for the CPL season. Do you have any idea, like, what's the big news out of Atletico Ottawa this week?
Well, one of those big signings would be the striker, Brian Wright from Ajax Ontario, not too far from my hometown of London, Ontario, was signed earlier this week. He scored 39 goals, had 34 assists and 80 appearances with the squad when he played with the University of Vermont Catamount. And this is an exciting player. I mean, with those goals alone, you know, you're going to get action from this guy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's going to be exciting. If you have a guy that can put the ball in the back of the net that often, Yeah, I mean, people are going to love sitting in those stands on a nice sunny summer day, watching him plow the ball into the back of the net on repeated occasions. And yeah, it's going to be exciting. I mean, what do you think, Zach? Like, are you a big soccer fan? And what do you think about this signing?
Honestly, I'm not a huge soccer fan, but seeing these numbers from all these players that are being signed by, to Atletico Ottawa, I'm getting excited for soccer. But for 80 appearances and 39 goals, those numbers alone impressed me. And I am really looking forward to seeing this guy produce on our team.
Absolutely. I mean, this guy was recently loaned out to Birmingham, and he had 26 appearances with them for 6 goals. So he definitely has what it takes and the passion to go further and improve his game, which I'm excited that he's chosen to do that with Ottawa Atletico. It's going to be incredible to add that depth to our team.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like we said before, the fact that he can put the ball in the back of the net on repeated occasions, you know that it's going to be a very exciting player to watch. And at the other end of the field, the guy who's going to be stopping the ball, they also signed goalkeeper Teodor Obadal. Now, what can you tell me about him, Lita? Did you see this signing? And I know he's quite young, too. He's only 19 years old.
Yeah, he's 19 years old, and he's been playing since he was 9. It's absolutely incredible the journey that this kid has gone on to get here in Ottawa. He was the second goalkeeper announced by the team for a reason. And he comes from over in Serbia. Yeah. So he started when he was 9, and when he was 14 years old, he actually made his debut with the senior team. So it's incredible. He's had 70 professional appearances for the third tier side over in Europe. So it's going to be interesting to see what his youth is going to bring to this team moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I mean, anytime you sign a young goalkeeper, you know that he's going to have the ability to be molded into something that you want. But I mean, having played for FK Lokomotiva Belgrade, like that's a pretty big team. And to be able to have, like you said, that many appearances, like a lot of experience in goalkeeping in general, I mean, second goalkeeper on the team, 16th player signed on the team, like that's huge. So it'll really be interesting to see how they sort out the goalkeeping for the team this year.
Yeah, guys, I think we're going to have to get some tea because we're definitely going to lose our voices once we're allowed out to these games and cheer our heads off.
Yeah, can you imagine like just being able to hang out at TD Place this summer, watch a soccer game in the afternoon, and maybe even go catch a basketball game at night? That would be absolutely incredible. It would be one amazing day out, or weekend out for that matter, if they're not even on the same day. But it's going to be incredible. Building of professional sports teams here in Ottawa just continues to happen. Obviously, we've touched on the unfortunate news for the Ottawa Titans baseball team not being able to start because of the border closures and all that. But the excitement that's being built around Atletico Ottawa and around the Blackjacks. And obviously, yeah, the Sens are wrapping up, but I mean, there's just so much excitement for Ottawa sports now. And I can't even hold back my excitement. It's so exciting to watch.
Right? They're keeping that dream alive. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that does it for the first segment here on the Press Box. Stick around and we will have some big news out of the NFL and the Ottawa Senators. Take a look at what happened with them over the last week. But we will be right back here on CKDJ 107.9. And that's how you do a segment nice and clean. Boom.
Very nice.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
And we're back. I'm Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Natto.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
And we're here on the Press Box, and this second segment, we always touch on the pro sports world. So, Zach, let's talk about the Senators. They've had three games since our last episode, all against the Vancouver Canucks. What can you tell us on how they did and how impressive some of their games were?
Well, I want to start talking about their first game, okay? So Vancouver comes back, two games against Toronto, beats them both times, which was great to see. And then they go up against the Sens, and we shut them out 3-0. That was amazing. And a goal by Stutzla, no less. So you can't get a better Sens game than that, in my opinion. What do you think of the game?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that game was absolutely incredible. The second shutout in three games for Matt Murray since he returned from injury. Unfortunately, well, he ended up getting injured again. What happened from there, for the next game against the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, things got a little shaky. They lost to the Canucks 4-2 on the Saturday. Colin White and Dadonov scoring the only goals. Dadonov, though, he also got an assist, so he was kind of like our star for that game. Again, it was pretty close, but yeah, then somewhere in the game, Sens lost control, and it just spiraled out of control. But it wasn't all so bad, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, the 4-2 scoreline, it doesn't do it justice. They played a pretty decent game, allowed a couple, let's say, questionably weak goals, per se. But it was definitely something that it could have been a little bit better. I know that game was the game that Matt Murray got injured. It kind of turned into a bit of a disaster because the game was about to start, and during warmup, Anton Forsberg, who was expected to start that game, ends up getting injured in warmup, and then they have to call on Matt Murray, who wasn't exactly expecting to play that game. And then what happens from there is he does something and injures himself on what looked to be a pretty harmless play. What do you think about that play, Zach?
Yeah, it was pretty weird, I guess. Like, maybe Murray didn't sleep very well the night before, or the night before. He was still buzzing from his big shutout win. But it looked like a pretty stock save to me. But yeah, it was another injury for him. And it looked like the Sens were going to have to look to the Zamboni driver maybe to step in as goalie, but they ended up finding somebody to step in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they went with their third stringer that game, which happened to be Marcus Hogberg, but their fourth stringer emergency call up, I guess you want to call it, like you said, the Zamboni driver from Toronto, but it was it ended up being forward Artem Anisimov, and that created a whole social media storm of just the memes at how hilarious it would have been if Artie Party, as they call him, would have gotten to get into the game, his first ever professional goaltending game. Like, fortunately for him, but unfortunately for the fans, he didn't get to play, but Marcus Hogberg got in there and kind of sort of shut the door, but allowed a couple goals, and they ended up going on to lose 4-2. But then they followed it up with their game on Monday night. How did that go, Zach?
Much, much better for the Sens. It was a solid 2-1 win against Vancouver. Josh Norris got his 14th. Batherson got his 17th goal. Brady, the shimmy master, Tkachuk, he got an assist on both of those goals. Much tighter game than the other ones. Neither team wanted to mess up really in this one, but the Sens managed to get through and get some offense at the right moments. And this one was a really fun game to watch.
Oh, yeah. I loved watching this game. And I mean, it was kind of a cool story because they started this 4-game series against Vancouver, but the first two were in Vancouver, and then they moved both teams to Ottawa to play the next two. So definitely interesting to see how the teams adjusted to Ottawa being the home team, and obviously having the last change and all that goes along with being the home team in that one. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely exciting to watch. It was a great game, and that pass by Brady Tkachuk was just amazing, like almost behind the the back, no look. It was just an absolute incredible pass to set up Drake Batherson's goal. But I mean, a great week all in all for the Senators, 2-1 versus the Canucks. At the time heading into the game, they were, I think it was like 3 or 4 points behind the Canucks. And now they're only 1 or 2 points back after two wins and a loss. So we will see what happens here down the stretch. If the Canucks can get together and start to put together some wins and maybe get back into the playoff hunt. But I mean, it's going to be tough for the Sens to get in the playoff hunt. They are quite a ways back, but we shall see what happens. Now, moving on to the NFL, Lita, you are our NFL guru. What is the big news happening in the NFL? I know the draft is up this week. What can you tell us about the NFL this week?
Grace us with your knowledge, please.
If you insist. The NFL draft actually starts tonight, guys, 8 o'clock sharp. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be insane. There are so many needs that teams have to tackle and only so many picks to go through to get them. And as we know, Trevor Lawrence is predicted to go number one overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Minshew era is ending with that mustache, unfortunately. And it seems like the Jets are going to go with Zach Wilson at number two. The number third pick is up in the air with the 49ers. There's talk that the Garoppolo era is ending as quarterback Mac Jones has been highly, highly linked to the 49ers. But that could also be a smokescreen with Justin Fields also possibly still going number three, where he should be going on the draft board, in my opinion. So there's tons of stuff going on. I mean, the draft prospects are insane. One you might not know about is Nico Collins out of Michigan. He's 6'4", 215 pounds, and he's a wide receiver that loves to make contested catches. In 2017, Collins was beyond solid for 37 catches for 729 yards, 7 touchdowns, and a yard per average catch at 19.7 yards, which is glorious for any quarterback to throw to. So, I mean, there's tons of stuff going on. And I know, Eric, you mentioned as well that there's a fair amount of Canadians in this draft as well.
Yeah, I've seen reports that there's up to a possibility of 6 Canadians going in this draft. I know I've seen multiple reports that said there could be 6 in the first round, but you were saying that, no, it looks like it could be upwards of 6 in the entire draft, which, I mean, even then, we all know Canadians are few and far between in the NFL. There's not as many as realistically there should be. But I mean, going back to the draft, and my question for you, Lita, because I haven't really been following the lead up to this draft, is it a virtual draft or is it an in-person draft? How are they doing that this year? Because I'm more interested as a Patriots fan to see if Bill Belichick's dog is going to be making a pick like he did last year, because that was hilarious.
Fair question to ask. My understanding is that it's going to be similar to last year's draft, where a majority of it is virtual. But for those first top picks, it is going to be in person so they can have that experience and give old Roger Goodell a hug, as a lot of these players are vaccinated. So they can do that now.
Okay, well, that makes total sense, but I'm really hoping for Bill Belichick's dog to make a good pick. It looks like, speaking of the Patriots, they are slated to go 15, but I know there's been a lot of talk about them possibly trading up to get a quarterback, even after they re-signed Cam Newton for this coming season. I think they're really desperate to find a really good quarterback. And the talk is that Justin Fields may be going to them, or Mac Jones, or any of these top quarterbacks that aren't expected to go in the top two, top three. There's also the chance that they make a trade with Atlanta. And I know you were filling me in before the show that there's a pretty big name that could be sent out of New England. And I hadn't quite seen this yet, but it's not surprising, but it's also kind of shocking and heartbreaking that he might be on his way out.
Yeah, I'm sorry to tell you this, Eric, but Stephon Gilmore might be headed out of New England, used as some trade bait to get the Falcons pick so that they can actually get a viable quarterback, as a large majority of the top six are predicted to go within the top 10 at best. So if you want one of those top tier quarterbacks, you definitely got to pay to get them this year.
I'm excited. I'm excited for the draft. And if it's a lot of virtual, it's kind of depressing, though, to be honest, in my opinion, that it won't be 100% virtual, because I don't know about you, Lita, but I had such a great time watching the virtual draft last year and just seeing the gradual, let's say the gradual drunkenness of Roger Goodell as the draft went on. He seemed like he was getting into the cocktails quite a bit, and he started to slouch and be a little bit more sunken into his chair the later the first round went. But it should be interesting to see what happens. I mean, good for the players that are going to get the chance to be there live and do the walk and get the hat and all that stuff. I mean, I know that was one of the heartbreaking parts of last year's drafts in multiple sports, let alone the NFL, to not be able to have the full fanfare of getting up on the stage and all that. So it's definitely going to be exciting.
100%. Like you said, these people work so hard to get that moment to hear their name called, and to not have that full experience, it definitely sucks. But I feel like this draft is going to be absolute chaos, more so than any other year, because like we've touched on, tons of quarterbacks are up. There's also a dire need within the NFL for teams to start shoring up their offensive and defensive lines. The Falcons, especially, they hurt so much last season. They actually had almost 5,000 passing yards thrown on them on that defense. It was so bad, which is one of the reasons why, you know, they're going to be open to that possible trade with the Patriots and even with my own Ravens for Julio Jones, a wide receiver. If that trigger is going to be pulled, it will be pulled on draft night. Anything can really happen here. And with returning teams like the Buccaneers not really having a lot to address immediately for their team, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw the Buccaneers actually trade out of the first round and shore up more picks for that long-term rebuild that they will inevitably have to do when and once Brady is ever vanquished from the NFL realm of football fields.
They will need quite the extensive rebuild at some point in the near future, within the next couple years, because yes, they were able to re-sign their entire starting lineup from the Super Bowl win, but that's not going to last, because the first time that's ever happened in the salary cap era, and I don't see it re-happening, even if they do defend the title and win again this year.
Something like that happening, you're more likely to win the Super Bowl as a team than you are to actually re-sign all of your players back from that Super Bowl win. So it is highly unlikely. Honestly, though, if I saw a player going to the Buccaneers, I would say would be a running back. And one of the people that you actually brought up to my attention, Chuba Hubbard, one of the Canadian picks that are floating around in this year's draft. He's a running back out of Oklahoma State Cowboys, and he's originally from Sherwood Park, Alberta. He's 6 foot, 208 pounds. And in his 2019 season, he dominated, guys. 328 attempts for over 2,000 yards and 21 touchdowns. It's absolutely incredible. And you can't go anywhere on YouTube without seeing this man's highlights. He ran a 4.36 in the 40-yard dash during the pro day. He can be absolutely lethal if he goes to the right team. And with how Brady likes to throw to his running backs, I can see this being a fit.
Oh, yeah, I can definitely see Chuba Hubbard being a great fit down there, but it will definitely be interesting to see where he ends up, because I know a lot of people thought that he might declare for last year's draft after that incredible season, but he decided to go back one more year. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see some of these Canadians like him and where they end up. Now, sticking with the NFL, what other major news is there other than the draft? I know there was a trade that happened yesterday, I believe it was, in the NFL.
The trade between the Panthers and Denver? Yes.
Yeah, that one.
That is a game-changing trade that happens. So beforehand, if you were to ask me if the Broncos were going to pick a quarterback in this draft, I would say pretty much guaranteed. Unfortunately, Drew Lock has not been overly good. And considering the situation they had last season where they didn't even have a quarterback to play, even though I know COVID-19 did play a role in that, they need to shore up that position. Absolutely. Especially with the talent that they have at wide receiver with guys like Judy on that team receiving. Even with this trade, which is a sixth round pick going to the Panthers for the acquisition of Teddy Bridgewater, I can still see the Broncos taking a quarterback. It just won't be as high as I expected them to. And I wouldn't be surprised if Teddy, unfortunately, was kind of put into that journeyman role where he's starting for half of this season just to allow that rookie some reps where he's not getting absolutely destroyed by other defensive lines.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense, right? Like, if you're going to have the guts, let's say, to acquire a quarterback like a Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, he's not your superstar quarterback like a Tom Brady or a Lamar Jackson or anything like that, but he's still a solid quarterback when he is playing, when he's healthy, when he's on his game. He can do some damage depending on the weapons he has to throw to and to pass to. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see because, I mean, as of right now, Denver's sitting at number nine. So, I mean, we'll see what kind of quarterbacks are available at that, or if they move down or if they move up. I just love watching the drafts in any of the sports, just strictly for some of the big trades that you don't expect to happen that happen on the trade floor. Zach, do you have any ideas of what you're expecting for the NFL draft this week, or any thoughts on this?
Not really. You guys covered most of it fantastically, so I might add. I'm just excited to see where Kyle Pitts ends up. You know, he's a tight end from Florida. He's just had a real good like comeback story. He dropped 9 passes back in his 2018-2019 season. But since then, this past season, he had 43 receptions and 0 drops on 66 targets last season. So a guy who can make a switch that fast and be like solid and reliable, I think he's going to go great. I'm thinking he might go to the Atlanta Falcons, maybe. They're a team who really needs to bounce back, and a guy who's a solid rock like that, you know, he can really shake things up there.
Yeah, I can see that happening for sure. Absolutely.
I know a lot of the draft reports that I've seen circulating have said that he may end up playing for Miami. I mean, he played in Florida, so why not stay there? But it'll definitely be interesting to see some of these guys like Jamar Chase, the wide receiver, Kyle Pitts, the tight end, Devonta Smith, the wide receiver as well. Some of these guys like that you may know, but you may not expect to go in the top 10, but they may actually be in the top 5. Like there's some big names on this board, and it's going to be really exciting to watch tonight.
They're so slim in certain areas within this draft, like wide receivers, not a whole lot of them in this draft that can be starter ready. You know, so it's definitely going to be interesting. Zach, you're a Bills fan, correct?
Not exactly. I'm kind of on the fence right now, actually, trying to decide on what team to cheer for. I have a
Baltimore Ravens.
I have a Miami Dolphins hat. I don't know if I should just jump ship and
you're gonna jump
for
that
them.
Bandwagon, eh? Okay.
I don't know. Maybe, you know, I like the colors.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I'll argue one wide receiver I've had my eye on is Jaylen Waddle. He's like one of the fastest prospects in that position, and he's had 17 career touchdowns. So he doesn't have a lot of experience, I guess. But they all average 44.5 yards per reception. So he's a guy who can really, if your team's down near the end and you need a solid, fast guy near the end, he can really get a lot of game-winning touchdowns, I think.
It's funny that you mentioned that, and the fact that you're thinking of becoming a Miami fan is because Miami's probably going to pick a wide receiver fairly early in the draft to kind of reaffirm their commitment to Tua after all of this has done. I mean, they got rid of Fitzmagic, who was kind of, you know, helping to mold him in the NFL. And that would be a great move. Do you think he would make a good move over in Miami?
Oh, absolutely. Especially how like hard Miami worked to get this pick. You know, they had to trade just to get the sixth pick. So I think a lot of people are thinking maybe Devonta Smith might be the best wide receiver. He is the Heisman Trophy winner after all. But I'd be surprised if they got Jaylen Waddle, but I wouldn't be disappointed, I'll say.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see Jaylen Waddle going fairly high, considering, like you said, his speed and the deep threat that he can cause. Because if you have somebody that fast running down the sideline that can break free from a defender and be wide open with nothing but daylight, that's huge, especially, like you said, late in the game if you're down by a score or even less than a touchdown and you just want to go for that shot. But yeah, like I said before, it's going to be really, really fun to watch the draft tonight. I'm really pumped. And
is it bad that part of me kind of expects to a point that the Jaguars aren't going to pick Trevor Lawrence and they're just going to mess up this first round pick somehow?
Well, they messed up their whole season. I wouldn't be surprised if they mess up with like somehow landing the first round pick too, and then they mess that up.
Yeah, I don't see them not picking Trevor Lawrence, but it would be an ultimate Jacksonville Jaguars thing to not pick Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the Jaguars and the Jets going first and second. Anything can happen in this draft, guys.
Definitely, definitely. Well, that does it for our second segment, a jam-packed NFL segment, but we will be back after a break here and talk about the UFC that happened this past weekend and a little bit from the boxing world as well. So stick around here on CKDJ 107.9.
Very nice. Well,
that was a good one.
I rant when I talk football.
No, that was good. Great. And I mean...
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back. I am Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Natto.
And I'm Lena McLeod.
And guys, let's talk about the big, enormous pay-per-view card that was UFC 261 on the weekend. I don't know if you guys watched this. I didn't actually get a chance to watch it because I wasn't paying for it. I just am a broke college student like you guys, but I just saw all of the highlights and oh my goodness, what a card it was. And it started out the main event card with a bit of a crazy freak injury. Did you guys see this?
Oh, I heard it, I felt it, and yeah, I saw it. It was nasty. Chris Weidman shattering his leg on the knee of Uriah Hall. Ugh, what did you think, Lita?
Like you said, I felt it. It hurt to watch. I can only imagine how painful it was to experience. And what blew my mind is this injury is freakishly similar to one that he actually didn't mean to do, but... he had another person throw kicks at him who broke their leg in a similar fashion.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a freak circumstance to have somebody snap their leg on somebody else's leg on a leg kick.
The first leg kick.
Yeah, the first kick. Like Uriah Hall goes down in UFC history as the first person to win a fight without landing a single punch, a single kick, nothing. He landed nothing. It was literally like 16 seconds into the fight. Weidman lands a leg kick and snaps his leg. And like you said, he is the same guy who blocked a leg kick from Anderson Silva, who snapped his leg a few years back. So freak circumstance. And I mean, it was scary to see, especially because he hit him, his leg broke, and then you could see the leg go back as if he was going to put weight on it, and he just crumpled. Like, I can't even imagine the pain that he was in. He had to be stretchered off from the octagon, and in front of that many fans, oh my goodness, I couldn't imagine being there. I probably would have thrown up in my seat.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, what a way to open up the UFC, being back in front of the fans with such a freak accident to occur. You know, I don't know about you, but I personally feel like him going to put his weight back on that broken leg probably hurt a lot more than that initial hit. You know what I mean? Like, cause you still have some shock in your system at that point, but yeah. It didn't even look like he fully understood that he broke his leg until he actually fell down. And then you just see the poor man grasping his head, yelling.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was insane to see. And oh man, I mean, the pictures that he posted on Instagram of the x-rays from his leg after the fight was just like, how did you snap it that badly? Oh my goodness. But
well, you saw he threw a kick.
I know, but it's just like, how did it break so badly? Oh my God. Like, I can't even imagine the pain that was going through his body, especially after, like you said, the hype and the excitement of being there and all that, and then having to come down and be like, oh my God, my leg is shattered. Like, ouch. I can't even. I just, like I said, if I was in attendance, I probably would have either A, passed out, or thrown up all over the person in front of me.
Yeah, no, it was a wild. Yeah, it was gross. And it was just a wild night overall for the UFC, I found. Eh, Zach?
Yeah, it's funny. It's every card or every fight on the main event card counts as a knockout. Even that fight, even though Uriah Hall didn't touch him, it still counts in the record books as a TKO. And the action didn't stop there. We had three title fights. Valentina retained her flyweight title with a knockout, silencing all the doubt that I had. I thought this was the fight that she was going to hang it up, but no, she totally proved me wrong. What'd you guys think of that one?
Yeah, didn't she do that in like incredibly fast fashion too? Like 3 minutes and some odd seconds?
Yeah, all these fights were over like so fast. Like none of them lasted past the third round, which was incredible.
Exactly. I mean, to have three title fights and none of them reached the championship rounds of rounds four or five was just absolutely insane. And yeah, Valentina Shevchenko defeating Jessica Andrade, like just like you said, silencing the critics and going, I'm still here. I'm still the champion. I retained my belt. To follow that up with the women's strawweight belt and Zhang Wei Li against Rose Namajunas. And I don't know about you guys, but Rose, I love Thug Rose. Thug Rose is incredible to watch. And she knocked out Zhang Wei Li to get the title belt from Zhang Wei Li. So she is the new strawweight champion. And absolutely incredible fight by her. I don't know what you guys think, but I love Thug Rose.
No, that was great. I mean, this is her second time being the champion in 4 years. And like Zach mentioned, that was over super fast. That was like under a minute or something.
And with a head kick finish, like, oh, perfect. And yeah, I love Rose as well. Like, she's just got such a great character and grit. And she brings that in the octagon. I love it every time she fights.
Yeah. And I mean, you saw, I don't know if you guys saw the highlights, but like at the beginning when Bruce Buffer's up there and he's introducing her fighting out of the blue corner, like just she's there on camera saying, I am the best. I am the best. I am the best. Like hyping herself up. And she backed that up with one hell of a fight. And like you said, that knockout, just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, she warned Wei Li. She did say she was the best, and she's standing right across from you in the octagon. What do you think's gonna happen, unfortunately?
Exactly. And then the main event of the evening, the welterweight belt, Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal. This was going to be one heck of a fight, especially with what Masvidal and Usman have been through against each other in the past. And it did not disappoint. Usman just absolutely dominated. I don't know about you guys, but I love watching Usman fight, and especially knocking out someone like Masvidal. I can't stand Jorge Masvidal, to be honest.
He is a bit of a showboat, and I can kind of see the little bit of disdain there. But yeah, Usman, he's my favorite UFC fighter. And the thing about watching him is it seems every fight he just gets better, and he's just building himself up to me as this unstoppable guy. Like, nobody can beat him. Like, he's beaten everybody pretty much in the rankings, and they even showed Colby Covington. He looks primed and ready to come back. He wants his rematch. That's going to be another bloodbath. I could see Usman having to break his jaw again just to put him away. But yeah, Masvidal, he was talking that ish, you know, bragging a lot. He really believed in himself, and you have to have confidence, you know, but Usman's confident in himself too, and really made him pay for it in the end. I think he like taunted him a little bit right before Usman faked him out and gave him a nice right hand. What do you think of this, Lita? That was the fight of the night for me.
Masvidal was definitely talking some ish before that right hook landed on his face. I mean, Masvidal, I don't mind his showboatingness. I honestly don't. I think it kind of adds to the sport, you know, gets that little bit of drama in there for people who don't follow it as much to kind of drag them in. But in this case, you don't want to be that much of a showboater while you're in the octagon per se with, you know, an Usman who wants to settle things, to put it politely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you go up against a guy like Kamaru Usman and you showboat, he's gonna shut you up rather quickly, especially like you said, when you're talking that ish. It's one of those things where people want to stop that as soon as possible and be like, no, you're done. I'm going to lay you out, and you are not going to have another word, because you could see the kind of the swagger and the, oh yeah, you think you're going to get me, and then boom, just out, done.
Yeah.
It was definitely well-deserved for Usman, and I'm glad that he retained that belt, because, oh my God, what a fight.
No, now we're talking about showboating and stuff. Did you guys see what Conor McGregor said on Twitter about the fight?
Oh, no.
He said Usman was copying his shots, talking about his punches. I don't know if Conor McGregor copyrighted punches, but he's claiming those punches to be his. And he's saying he likes 170 as a weight class, and he'd be down to go up, I guess, and challenge him for the belt. What do you guys think of that?
I think that would be a bad move for McGregor, because he got beat up the last few times that he's re-entered the ring, to put it politely there. I know he definitely wants to get that bag to go with the fight, but I think McGregor days are long, long gone.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I know he has a fight coming up in a few months that's already been announced, but just give it up. Like, you're not going to go up against a Kamaru Usman and win. He will literally destroy you. He will destroy you the first second he gets. Like,
yeah, you got embarrassed by Khabib. You know, you lost to Dustin, but he's going to bloody you up if you get in that ring with him. Like, Usman is another beast in the octagon.
Now, Lita, I don't know much about boxing. We've discussed this before. I am not a boxing fan at all, but you are pretty hyped about some big boxing events coming up, are you not?
Oh, yeah. So this weekend, there's not one, but there's two boxing events happening on May 1st. So it's going to kick off with Derek Taroza versus Joseph Parker. It's going to be a heavyweight bout card, 12 rounds. The 37-year-old Taroza is going to be taking on the 29-year-old Joseph Parker. Parker does have the reach advantage going into this at 76 inches and a higher knockout percentage at 75%, whereas Taroza is 72% for knockouts. And he's coming off of, I would say, not an embarrassing loss, but definitely a loss to Usyk. And then Andy Ruiz Jr. is actually going to be back in action as well at 8 p.m. on May 1st. He's going to be taking on Chris Areola. That's going to be another 12-round bout that will be happening. And when you're in the heavyweight division, guys, that's usually anything above 200 pounds. Anything above that weight, it's good to go. You don't have to double check it. Ruiz is coming in close to around 255 pounds. We don't, unfortunately, have a weight for Areola at this point, but it's going to be interesting because Ruiz, I don't know if you guys remember this, but he made headlines back in 2019 because he was the first heavyweight of Mexican descent in the sport. And he's working on a comeback as he lost his belts back to Anthony Joshua when they had their rematch. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays on his road to redemption. There's a lot of talks going on in the boxing world as well regarding heavyweight belts specifically. There's rumors still floating around about Anthony Joshua taking on Tyson Fury, hopefully later on this year. So this could be a match that could be a stepping stone to that eventual Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua match, or it could be something after that match that we could see kind of continuing the battle for the heavyweight championship. And with that, I would have to say Andy Ruiz is going to take this. He has less mileage on him, hasn't taken as many blows, and he's younger, you know? So I can see that being in his favor, even though with Areola, he does have a higher knockout percentage. But overall, great cards and lots of, you know, toe-to-toe foam booth style fighting happening.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like it's going to be an exciting night of boxing. Like I said, I've not really ever watched very many boxing fights, but I might have to check these out because you bring the hype and you are hyping these up. So I might actually have to try and check these out this weekend because it sounds like it's going to be an exciting night and it sounds like some incredible fighters. And like you said, those heavyweight fights, oh my God, they're always fun to watch.
Oh, they're great to watch. And the cool thing is as well is there's some interesting matches in the undercard. On the Derek Chiroza and Joseph Parker card, there's going to be a fight between Taylor, who's an orthodox boxer, and Jonas, who is southpaw. These are women boxers. Taylor is 17-0 with 6 KOs, and Jonas is 9-1-1, but she has a 7 KO record with those 9 wins already. So that's going to be a battle out there. And then you also have the 23-year-old giant Fundora, who is 6'6" in the welterweight division, facing off against Costa, who is 34-4. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that is because there's a 6-inch height difference between those two fighters.
Jeez, that's going to be insane to watch some of these. Well, that has been our third segment, and what a segment, that UFC segment, that boxing. Oh my God, what fun was that, guys? And let's just say, if you're a big fight fan, there's been some really good fights and there's been some really good ones that are hyped up by our very own Lena McLeod. If you are a boxing fan, check these out because she is straight hyping them up. So I know you will not be sorry if you get a chance to check out any of these fights.
I know I'm checking them out.
Oh, thanks, guys. Go watch some awesome fights.
Yeah, exactly. We will. But anyways, stick around here on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. When we come back, we will have a quick look ahead at what the Ottawa Senators are up to this coming week and the moment you've all been waiting for, Zach's weekly betting picks. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back. I am Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Natto.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
Now, guys, this is our final segment of the episode, and let's talk about the week that is coming up for the Ottawa Senators. Zach, I know you're a big hockey fan as well. I'm excited. Saturday night, hockey night in Canada. The Sens are in Montreal to face off against the Habs at the Bell Center. What are you expecting out of the Sens this week?
Well, they're coming off of like some fiery games against the Vancouver Canucks. They're absolutely playing their best hockey so far this season. It's just a shame they're playing it at the end. The Habs, they're looking to hold on to that fourth spot for dear life. And I don't see them really making it easy for Ottawa in this one. So it's going to be tight, I think. I'm hoping Ottawa comes out with a win though, but these next, like we're really getting down to the wire here in this season. So there's no easy games ahead of Ottawa really this season.
No, exactly. And I mean, this week alone, they have this, the Habs in Montreal on Saturday, then they're back home to face off against the Winnipeg Jets on Monday. And then they have the Habs in town in Ottawa on Wednesday. So three crucial games this week for not only the Senators to try and keep the momentum going and maybe get a little bit of a strong finish to their season, but also the Habs, those two games for the Habs, like you said, trying to hold on to the fourth spot. The Jets need to get out of a bit of a mini funk that they're in and hope that they can keep a playoff spot, because they've dropped from second to third behind Edmonton now. So they're fighting with Edmonton for that third spot, and coming up on their heels is Montreal. So it's going to be a battle between Montreal, Edmonton, and Winnipeg for those last three playoff spots in the North Division, because I hate to say it, but I think we all know that the Leafs are going to clinch a playoff spot any day now, but these other three teams, they are battling hard and they are trying their hardest to keep those playoff spots and play for positioning. So it's going to be an exciting week ahead for the Ottawa Senators.
And there's no more back-to-backs. So the Sens are really going to have to stay fluid, stay sharp, and be on their toes, because they're going to be playing different teams all the time. And I think going into the end of the season, if the Sens stick to what's working right now, we're going to see a very competitive Sens team next year. And they're going to be giving all these top teams in the division a hard time in this final stretch.
Oh, definitely. And I can't agree more. Like, if they can finish strong, that gives the Ottawa Senators fans all the sicko mode that's going on this season. That's been absolutely incredible to watch. And it's going to give all the fans and the team and the players excitement for what's ahead next season and a possibility of challenging for a playoff spot. And I mean, you never know, right? Depends on what happens down the stretch and what they do in the offseason. But it's going to be exciting. And I'm really excited to watch some of these games over the next week.
As soon as you said sicko mode, I just had the image in my mind of hearing that song in the stadium again. And it's almost reality. I can almost feel it. Guys, I can't wait till we can hear like all the songs and sounds of a real live sports game again, you know?
Oh, I know. I can't wait to get into the arena again at CTC and listen to good old Blur song 2 every time that the Sens score, or Cotton Eye Joe, or any of these songs that are synonymous with going to a Sens game. So it's going to be exciting. And hopefully next September, October, we'll actually be able to be in attendance.
Like I said, guys, we're going to have tea ready for when we lose our voices from yelling so much at these games. It's going to be fine.
Exactly. Right. Like it's going to be fine. We're going to be good. Now, Zach, the moment that everybody tunes into this show for, we know that they don't really care about what we're talking about, except for your betting picks.
That's the biggest lie, but I appreciate the ovation. Thank you, Eric.
You're very welcome, man. But what have you got in store for us this week? But also, better yet, how do we do last week and how are we doing on the year so far?
Well, we're still positive. We're 14-11 after 7 episodes so far. Last week, we went 2-2. Carolina came through with a 4-2 win against Florida for us. And Yuzmin knocked out Masvidal with an awesome, awesome right hand. That was our risky play, but it ended up coming through for us. So we ended up finishing 2-2 once again for the second week in a row. This week, I'm doubling down. We were pretty lucky with some of these picks. I'm going to dive right into the money line. We're going to the NHL. We got the St. Louis Blues taking on the Minnesota Wild. Now, St. Louis has won more matchups against Minnesota this year, and one of them was a 9-1 victory. And since then, Minnesota had been on a hot streak. Their last loss came courtesy of the Blues more than 2 weeks ago. But Minnesota won't be looking to take their foot off the gas pedal down the final stretch. And St. Louis needs to distance themselves from Arizona to clinch that final spot in the playoffs. I've been loving Minnesota's hockey this year, but I have a better feeling with the Blues on this one. Don't forget, they won the Cup not too long ago. My money line pick for today is the St. Louis Blues beating the Minnesota Wild. And for the over-under pick, we're staying in the NHL with the New York Islanders and the New York Rangers. It's a battle for New York as the Islanders are taking on the Rangers in Madison Square Garden. Both of these teams have lots to prove, with the Islanders fighting to stay on top of the Bruins. And it's not entirely possible for the impossible, sorry, for the Rangers to pull ahead of Boston. It's going to be a big ask for the Rangers. Boston has two more games to play than the Rangers. And hey, it's Boston. I don't see this game scoring more than five between these two teams. I was considering backing the Islanders with the handicap, but there's too many pieces involved in this game for me to feel confident with that pick. My over-under pick this week is the under 6.5 goals between the Islanders and the Rangers. Moving on to basketball for the handicap and the spread, Golden State Warriors against the Minnesota Timberwolves. We're really giving it to Minnesota this week, but it's all for a laugh. Going to the NBA, the Golden State Warriors have beaten the Timberwolves twice already this season. And whereas sometimes you hear good things about the Warriors, you never hear anything good about the Timberwolves. And that's because they're not a very good team this year. I'm feeling confident with Golden State covering the spread. There aren't any definitive lines yet for what the spread will be. I'm expecting a pretty wide range, so you can take your pick when you're making your bet cards. Golden State seems to either blow teams out or get blown out themselves. Anything can happen, so I wouldn't take too high of a handicap. My handicap this week is Golden State covering a spread of anywhere between -3.5 to -5.5. And finally, the bonus pick of the week is still in the NBA, and you guys are going to love this one. The Raptors destroyed the Nuggets early in this season, 135 to 111. They're going up against them for the second time and the final time this season. I know a lot's changed this year, and the Raps are in the underdog position now, but with how much better they're getting, it just means easy money for us, I think. I was thinking of betting the over in this one because I don't see it being a low-scoring blowout or anything. This is really risky considering how good Denver's been this year, but the Raptors are going to be fighting tooth and nail to grab that final playoff spot. My bonus pick of the week is Toronto Raptors beating the Denver Nuggets with at least a +4.5 to +6.5 handicap. What do you guys think?
Oh my God, man. I think that those are absolute fire picks. I'm excited to see that Battle of New York at MSG. It's always a fun time when the Isles face off against the Rangers. But I mean, that Raptors pick, that is gutsy, but I have faith in the Raptors. They, like you said, they are fighting tooth and nail to try and get this done and get the win and get back into the playoff hunt. So I have faith, and I think you got some solid picks there, man.
For sure. I mean, I have faith not only in the Raptors, Zach, but your picks. I'm betting my Kraft dinner money on them.
Wow. 100%. Wow. That is high praise, you guys. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to throw my hat in the ring too and be like, you know what? I don't need to buy another box of KD unless you get me the big win on these picks, and I can buy a lifetime supply with a big winning, because, oh man, I am hyped for these picks, but it should be really exciting to watch some of these games.
Yeah. I can't wait to see how these turn out.
Me neither.
All right. Well, on that note, that does it. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's almost lunchtime. We should all go grab a box of KD and have some lunch. But that does it for us here on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. I'm Eric Fox.
I'm Zach Natto.
And I'm Lita McLeod.
Have a great Thursday. And don't forget to put those picks in before it's too late.
See you guys.
Oh man, could I put hot dogs with my Kraft dinner?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Cool.
Full send.
Just want to make sure.
We're gonna get some phone calls about that one.
Probably. Out of everything we say, that's gonna be it.
Yeah.
Gotta have that weenie supreme, guys.
Oh man.
Canadian delicacy. Okay.